This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Taylor Quimby, sitting in for Virginia Prescott. First, there were all-night diners and gas stations, which are now mainstays. Then came the 24-hour supermarkets, urgent care centers, and big box stores open for the holidays. Our economies and societies now run on the forever clock. So, as we head into yet another holiday shopping season, let's consider not only who's working during the wee hours, but who is taking care of their kids. Author and producer Alyssa Quart wrote about the rise of 24-hour daycare facilities for Pacific Standard Magazine and spoke to Virginia about the new phenomenon.
Now, you visited Dee's Tots. This is in New Rochelle, New York. 24-hour, 7-day-a-week daycare center. Do we have any kind of accurate count on how many of these overnight daycare centers there are now?
You know, I was looking for that number, and I couldn't find it. I could find it anecdotally, which is calling around and looking online at the number, and they appear to be growing exponentially. And that makes sense because nearly 40% of Americans have non-standard work lives, which means they're working not only at night but early in the morning and erratically, you know. So sometimes they won't be working in the middle of the afternoon when it was normal for people to work, or they might be working on weekends. So these daycares have risen up in response to that.
So that's the general need for overnight daycare, these kind of non-traditional work hours. Any specifics, any people that you met there who were trying to balance this non-traditional work life with daycare?
Yeah, so I met people, parents who worked at big box stores where they were asked to work at night at Costco and Home Depot, but also nurses or nurses' aides who were working evening shifts or even weekend shifts. And one worker in particular works from 9 to around 2:30 in the morning and into the afternoon, and then picks up her kids and hangs out with them, and then drops them off again at 5:30 and works until the evening. Hmm. So there's basically two shifts that she has them in the daycare, and then she doesn't see them again until 10:30 at night. That is not untypical for these centers.
So she picks up her kids at 10:30 at night, but there are some who have to pick up their kids at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, I mean, Pat and Dolores had to be willing and able to wake up in the middle of the night like parents do after having worked these incredibly long hours with the kids in their house. And they're not young. I mean, they're in their 50s, late 50s, so this is a lot for them.
Pat and Dolores Hogan is the couple who run Dee's Tots. But, you know, it seems to me hearing about this, you know, picking up a kid at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, bringing them in very, very early in the morning, especially to people who don't have these kind of needs, anecdotally, they think, oh, it's awful. You know, how can that be? It's so disruptive. What kind of reactions did you get?
Yeah, I mean, I send my daughter to daycare where, you know, she could be in there 8 hours a day, and some of the other kids are there nine and a half hours. But, you know, when I brought it up with parent friends and acquaintances, often who weren't even sending their kids to daycare, sent their kids, you know, had their kids with a nanny or an au pair or something, they'd be startled. They'd be like, how could this be? It sounds horrible, you know. And I just, there's a gap in our understanding. I mean, we think that, okay, we're going to go pick up groceries at 2 in the morning or at midnight or even at 9 and in the evening, and we're not thinking, well, the person doing the checkout has to put their kids somewhere. And so I wanted to try to connect our understanding of this whole system of non-traditional labor and shift work stretching into the evening with what happens to children and the daycare needs that they now have. Mm-hmm. And I think the shock is that people just don't make those connections.
Well, Dolores and Pat, as we mentioned, they work on Thanksgiving when stores and nurses and chambermaids still have to work. I'm wondering if it's affordable. I can only imagine that working a low-wage job would just cover the cost of daycare.
Well, Dolores and Pat have a lot of state subsidies, you know, available to the parents. So many of the parents there are getting much of their daycare covered, and that's how they're able to pay for this, which is one of the reasons that the middle class is often in such bad position with this, because if you are not a, say, a well-paid doctor who's working long hours, but let's say you are a nurse, a, you know, old-fashioned lower middle class profession, and you don't qualify for subsidies, then you are paying a lot.
It's hard for any parent to imagine having a slumber party, you know, a room full of kids every single night. How many kids and how did the Hogans actually manage it?
Well, when I went there, you know, the kids, there was probably 6 around in the evening, roughly. And then overnight, you know, there's 4 until 10:30, and then there was just 2 overnight. So the numbers weren't shocking, and but I'm sure in some of these centers they can be larger than that. And it's just like any other slumber party is the word for it. I mean, I had to keep reminding myself not to try to take care of these kids like I would with my own 3-year-old, you know, because they're getting their teeth brushed. And, you know, Dolores is this pillar and she's like running around trying to do all this. But, you know, and Pat is too. But, you know, I was like, they're going to, one of them's going to have a meltdown. and it's just like it would be with my 3-year-old if she had, you know, 4 of her friends over.
Watching the kids, though, any sense, any observation on your part that they're aware that this is weird, or are they just being kids and being adaptive?
Well, there's 2 things here. In a way, it's less weird than if they were doing their other option, which would be informal daycare networks.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that would be extended family, neighbors, you know, people on the block, whatever, doing this kind of daycare, and sometimes there'll be strangers coming in and out in that environment, and it's even less predictable than the Hogans or daycare centers like the Hogans. So I actually think that this kind of 24-hour daycare is preferable, or in some cases, to the informal networks, because we don't really know what you're getting with them. By that same token, you know, there was, I saw ripples of uncertainty amongst the kids at night, and one of them said to me, thinking parents are going to save you. Why did the characters in this film we were watching think that? And, you know, and they were learning how to brush their teeth. And the little one, I think she was like 3 or 4, and she was perfectly able to put the toothpaste on the toothbrush. And I thought to myself, my 3-year-old will not be able to do this in a year. I mean, this is a kid who's used to taking care of herself, which, again, I don't want to just turn that into a tragedy because it cuts both ways. I mean, as I put it, it means she's parentified or able to parent herself, right, which has a certain sadness to it. But then it's also like she's resilient. You know, she'll probably be able to, you know, do things like put her toothpaste on her toothbrush when she's older that other kids who are being more coddled or, you know, more constantly cared for won't be able to.
Well, it does in a way recall a time or a situation where extended families do take care of kids and maybe, you know, cousins of varying ages would be thrown together. But you point out that especially in low-income families, these kind of extended networks do get strained. What do you mean by that?
Extended networks get strained by poverty. I mean, if you're a woman, let's say there were studies done, a single mother, you're going to be 30% more likely to rely on your extended families and your, you know, friends and so forth for help, which tightens community, right? I mean, I look at my own daycare practices, and I'm not leaning on my neighbors or anything like that, right? And I may not know some of them, right, as a result. But if you are depending on your family and your neighbors and your friends like that, there's just going to become a breaking point where they're just not going to be able to do it anymore. They'll just say, hey, I have my own kid, or, you know, I have no money to make dinner for your kid every night or what have you. So I think that's part of where the 24-hour daycare centers come in. I mean, and even when I was at this particular daycare center, there were non-parents doing drop-offs, right? So even with these extended hours, sometimes they'd need an aunt or a cousin to do drop-offs for kids.
Well, Lisa, it doesn't seem like our job landscape is going to change that much or that radically. Are we going to see a lot more of these kind of 24-hour or overnight daycare centers in the future?
Yeah, we're going to see more of these daycare centers in the future. And I actually loved what you guys were just saying in the lead-in to this show, which was, you know, yeah, you have all-night diners and all-night stores, and now you're having all-night daycare, and it's part of what I called the forever clock, which is the sense that, you know, we never stop working now, and we never stop shopping, and we never stop doing, and never start eating, right? And so we're going to have daycare for the workers who are supporting this forever economy.
Alyssa Quart, author of several books, including Republic of Outsiders, co-editor of the nonprofit Economic Hardship Reporting Project, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Word of Mouth continues with a historical look at the legalization of another drug, alcohol. How prohibition changed bluegrass music. That story when Word of Mouth continues.